House File 2511, Representative Pryor is not here, and so in lieu will be Vice Chair Banks, who will present.
Good morning.
We now have a quorum. Motion to approve the minutes. Representative Henderson Yeager, have you had a moment to look at minutes?
Yes.
Through your bill, Representative Brandt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, this is House File 2511, $750,000 in years 24 and 25. From the General Fund to the Department of Employment and Economic Development for the Mind the Gap Gaining Assistance to Prosperity Program grant. This is a bill that improves the quality of life of unemployed and underemployed individuals by improving, you know, their employment outcomes and developing individual earning potential. I am not the author of the bill. I am just pitch hitting for Representative Pryor, who could not make it today. And so I just want to turn it over to the expert star witness that we have here, and I'm hopeful that we can answer any questions afterwards.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Pierre Rhodes. My voice is hoarse. Sorry about that. But I felt it was very important for me to be here to represent our company with this bill. So greetings to all, to Chair Zhang and the rest of this fine committee. My name is Pierre Rhodes. I am the Director of Programs for Mind the Gap, located in western suburb of Minneapolis. I would like to thank you all for your time and your patience, and allow me to present a snippet of our program and our successes over the past 5 years. I'm here on behalf of our Executive Director and founder, Mr. David E. Johnson, who is away on business. Today we are here to discuss Bill H.R. number 2511. A little bit about Mind the Gap. Established in 2017 with the mission of creating pathways for individuals to close the gap to prosperity, Mind the Gap, also known as MTG, is a multifaceted workforce development organization created to improve the equality life of underemployed and underemployed African-American Minnesotans by providing employment outcomes and increasing and earnings potential. MTG is closing the gap to prosperity for those most impacted by offering innovative programming that intentionally engages participants holistically. Built on the premise that work transforms lives, MTG provides direct access to credentialed Class A commercial driver licenses, CDL training. Centering a culturally specific approach that incorporates historical contexts that are unique to Black lived experiences and providing opportunities to build skill sets to navigate systemic barriers, MTG improves employment outcomes. According to the Minnesota Trucking Association, Minnesota has a 5,285 truck driver deficit, which is the largest it has ever faced. The American Trucking Association estimates that over the next decade nationally, we'll need 1 million truck drivers to replace those who retire and keep up with the projected demand. Over the past 3 years, it has been noted that the trucking and transportation industry has been affected tremendously by the pandemic. Car parts are delayed, home appliances are delayed, parents have to transport their children to school, commodities are sitting at our shores, rising costs on consumer goods. Drivers are also constantly retiring and all are affected by the shortage of CDL drivers. There's an untapped pool that Mind the Gap Driving Beyond Barriers CDL training program is having tremendous success with in getting their licenses and helping to keep Minnesota moving. Our current focus is addressing the racial and economic inequalities in Minneapolis, Minnetonka, Hopkins, St. Louis Park, Plymouth, and Golden Valley. But we are here to work to address the overall inequalities persistent in Minnesota and even the country. Mind the Gap is committed to creating pathways for individuals to close the gap to prosperity. Our programs range from employment services, commercial driver's license training, and keys to financial literacy. Additionally, we have committed to being a community resource for those in need of sustainable housing. Our organization leverages local, county, and citywide and statewide resources to be a driving pillar in expanding communities. The men and women that are coming through our programs are receiving Class A commercial driver's licenses while advancing their earning potential to up to $70,000. In the past few years, we have partnered with organizations such as North at Work, the Minneapolis Urban League, and Twin City Rise in serving unemployed and underemployed African-American men and women in North Minneapolis and surrounding suburbs. We have also contracted with foundations such as Highway Credit Union Foundation, the Otto Bremer Foundation, Target Foundation, and most recently, MnDOT in Hennepin County. Allow me to share some statistical successes with you. Since 2017, since our inception, we have served 494 participants. Our Driving Beyond Barriers since 2017 has served successfully 264 participants. Our job program has served 186, and this incorporates our youth who are 18 years and older, 18 to 24. Financial literacy and capacity started in 2022. Since then, we have served 32 participants. Our housing and support services also started in 2022, and we have served 12 participants and families to this point. With the help of this bill, H.R. 2511, Mind the Gap will have the capacity financially to advance from its full-time employees and two part-time employees to hire four new full-time employees while serving as many as 200 more participants. This concludes my testimony. As I stated before, thank you for your patience and your time, especially with my voice.
Thank you, Peter Rhodes. Discussion. Represent Paper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it Mr. Rhodes?
Yes, R-H-O-D-E-S.
Oh, thank you very much. When I hear CDL, I perk up because I know there's such a need out there. So I appreciate your work on this. So typically a little bit, two questions real quick. Have you received funds from us before, from the state? And also then, how will these funds be used specifically to CDL? Is it truck rentals? Is it ownership? Just give me a little bit more of that in the weeds, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. So at this point, we have not received funding from this. We've applied for state funding in different venues, okay, even last year. We've had experience working with state funds when I worked for another organization, the YWCA of St. Paul, and working with DEED and also direct appropriations. I've had experience in doing that, and also this also has David Johnson, our CEO. When it comes to our program, we're contracted with Maley's Trans. So what we'll do is we'll contract with them. We offer not only just the employment services, but we also do the permit training and the in-cab training for the pre-trip inspections. Then after they finish doing that successfully, they go to Maley's Trans, a truck driving school here in Minnesota, and located in Shakopee. Then they more or less get their CDL license. This is like a six-week process. After that, then they come back to Mind the Gap, and we work with them with employment. So we are helping them find jobs. So that's basically the cut of what it is. But there's a lot of barriers that go along with that, as you find out that there's support services that are needed. So we pay for the training for individuals to get the trained, but then we also, we also pay our vocational navigator to help them find jobs, write resumes, do soft skill training when it comes to time management, resume writing, and even mock interviews. So these things are needed and important for the individual because those are the barriers that we face when we deal with the community that we serve. So when they come in, we do an individual employment plan with them, and then we find out during that plan what their barriers are and how we can meet their needs, which is why we started Mind the Gap.
Mr. Chair.
Baker.
And thank you. So if you did get this funding and things went forward, would basically an applicant and a participant be able to kind of get from start to finish if they did the 6 weeks and they passed the written test, basically a CDL license that would be paid for if they get on the road and get to it? I think that's great. What is the plan if somebody then doesn't finish it up, just goes halfway? Is there any skin in their game too? Have they invested in anything? Is there any protection for the state taxpayer dollar to, hey, Johnny, if you're going to walk away, you owe us at least something minimal? I don't know that. I hope it's not a problem, but how do we handle things like that?
So yes. So when it comes to that, we have to initially have a real hard line conversation with the participants. They sign off on an accountability plan, also with the employment plan. But then the sad part is there's no real repercussion that we can hold. We can't bill the state. And then for a participant quits, and then we say, you got to give us that back, that money. Well, it wasn't a law, and I had to deal with this problem before at the YWCA. So what I've learned to do is have hardline conversations. We take only the most serious people into our program. They go through our permit training. No school is paid for until they finish that permit training, and then they finish the bumper-to-bumper session, which is 40 hours of written CDL training. Then we worked out a plan with Maley's Trans that we would pay then for the participants. So we have a better success rate doing that than we had before with just giving participants an opportunity and them quitting on us in the middle of things, family situations, other things come up,
yep.
Just quitting because they couldn't pass the test. So we still do offer job training and with other employees. We do a lunch and learn so that it just say they have a hard time trying to get a Class A. There's still a Class B license that their Class A permit can allow them to get, and they can get a Class A, Class B job. It's like MnDOT. Also, they can work there. They can also work, Metro Transit, First Transit, and then we also partnered with Waste Management also with these young men who do have problems like that or have barriers that stop them from getting the Class A license that we pay for.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Thank you.
Further discussion. Closing remarks, Representative.
I just want to thank Mr. Rhodes for being here today to really give the committee the good information about the Mind the Gap program. I just want to close by saying I wish both the Mind the Gap and also Representative Pryor well in advocating for funding for this program. Thank you very much.
I will move the House File 2511 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Mr. Rose and Vice Chair Brand.
Thank you, guys.
Representative Hemmingson Yeager, can I get a motion to approve the minutes from March 22nd?
So moved.
All those who approve, say aye.
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 Motion carries. Next bill, House File 2199, Representative Howard. House File 3024, Representative Berg. All right, I like members who are here. I will move that House File 3024 be laid with possible inclusion. To your bill, Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm excited to bring this bill forward again. I authored it last biennium. We didn't get it through, but it is nonetheless an amazing bill. I have two sons, and I like to say that they are on their journey. And I'm not paying tuition while they find themselves. And we know that college isn't for everyone. And so this program called Building Strong Communities, which I'll refer to as BSC, is a multi-trade apprenticeship readiness program that has been intentionally designed to connect women, BIPOC community members, and veterans to careers in the building and construction trades. The goal of the BSC program is to provide individuals with an opportunity to start a career in the building and construction trades with the knowledge and skills needed to successfully enter a registered apprenticeship program. BSC is guided by construction industry professionals and is focused on the long-term goal of creating career opportunities for program participants. BSC works in partnership with the industry, a post-secondary institution, community organizations, project donors and end users, and municipalities. BSC works with participants through not only the program, but also through the placement into their chosen trade and throughout the first year in the industry. BSC is a statewide program with programs running in the Twin Cities, Rochester, and Duluth. North Hennepin Community College administers 8 weeks of the mostly virtual classroom training, and the trades provide up to 4 weeks hands-on training to get participants ready for the trade of their choosing. North Hennepin will provide instruction in interpersonal skills and foundational construction math. Participants will earn 4 college credits while attending the apprenticeship readiness program. Program graduation coincides with the start of the 2023 construction season, early May 2023. The requirements to participate in this program are as follows. Be at least 18 years old by May 1st, 2022, have earned a high school diploma, GED or equivalent, be able to pass a drug screen, possess a valid driver's license, and have access to reliable transportation. Not to be currently enrolled in construction union or trade training program, and legally eligible to work in the U.S. That completes my introduction. I do have someone here to answer questions.
Discussion. Representative Weems.
Chair Zhang and Representative Burke, thank you very much. You said the magic word. You said veterans. So what I am curious about in this grant is if there's a specific program or a specific line that you work veterans through, and if so, how many veterans do you have that are in the program or been in the program?
Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Weems. I have a soft spot for veterans, so that was one of the most important pieces to me when I accepted this as to be the author. I am going to go ahead and turn it over to Mr. Tom Dicklich with the Building Trades. I was asking him the same question earlier, and I do want to make sure you get an accurate answer.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Dicklich. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Building Instruction Trades Council. I'm also the Board Chair of the Building Strong Communities Program. Mr. Chair and Representative, sorry, thank you. So the main focus that we have on women, BIPOC community members, and veterans, how we do it is we do a lot of marketing and we work side by side with Helmets to Hard Hats.
Okay.
In fact, this year, Helmets to Hard Hats is coming under the umbrella of the BSC nonprofit. So we are a total labor management committee nonprofit, and Helmets to Hard Hats, the advantage we have about bringing them underneath our wing is we don't take the administrative costs for them. So the money that the legislature appropriates goes right to them. But we work with Justin H2H, and that's our primary access. And our executive director that we hired last year, this is his first year in the program, he is also a vet. So we really tie into the vet community. We're also trying to expand just not to the veteran community, but to veteran family members. So we're expanding our role we play with the veterans, and this is our attempt at doing that.
Representative Weems.
Chair Zhang and Mr. Dicklich. Just to follow up on that, thank you on the Hemel's Hard Hats, because we had already seen that come through, and it's like, boy, this sounds like somewhat the same thing, and you have a relationship there. I am also curious about what the geographic locations are. Is it just in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, or where else in the state does the program accommodate?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Weins. Yeah, so this started years ago, and prior to me being here, I've only been around, this is my second session. So this started as just a local through the Minneapolis Building Trades and specific projects in the metro area, and it's gone over through different names. Last year, we said we want to expand this to statewide. So we started out partnering with Rochester and WDI in Rochester and STOR in Duluth. The advantage we have is they also have community technical colleges in those cities. So as we build this out to where we want it to be, bigger and bigger and go further across the state, the locations that we have would have those technical colleges in them as well to help administer this program. But right now, our statewide attempt is with the Twin Cities, metro area, Duluth and Rochester.
Representative Weins.
And thank you, Chairman Jong. And just follow up, no questions. That sounds marvelous. I like the idea that you're expanding out to those target zones. And my colleague that's not here today, Pine Technical College, I mean, that's probably another one he would probably ask you about. But thank you very much.
Representative Baker.
Pass.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. This is near and dear to my heart. I want the trades and the high schools and the apprenticeship programs and to have pathways for our youth. And three women in my life are in the construction trades, and you know, it is a pathway for many. And so I love to see that you're serving such various groups of people that can benefit from this. And you know, my question is, you serve the 18, they're 18 years old and also high school GED. Have you had any thoughts on bridging that gap to the high schools in Duluth, the greater Duluth area? And when you're talking about Rochester, because one of the things that I think is really critical is getting the high school students where they have work release experience, like happened in the 80s. That's what I want to see come back, and I've been trying to get conversations. So I'd really ask that you look at that, because when they're 18 and they leave high school, they're already out of a system of having contacts. And so I'd really like to see credit for experience for the with the trades in relationships for the high school students, like you have for college in the classroom, for the four-year track, an absolute mirror image. And so anything I can do to help support that, I'm all in, because I think it's critical, whether it's the health occupations line, trades, chef, restaurant type things, we have to get them engaged much earlier in really middle school, and then get them tracked out in high school. So having those credit for experiences and love for the unions and the trades to be working together with the businesses and the school districts before they're 18. And that this is great, and I think it's wonderful, but I think you have the expertise to do it, and we could lead the way. I know Shakopee, I toured the school there for the trades, and one of the things the teachers were saying, we need to get the kids to be able to be on the job site before they're 18, shadowing and apprenticeship and internships so that they are exposed before 18. So anything we can do to bridge that gap, I think would be successful for the business community and for kids. So thank you for a great bill.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. I'm sorry, I don't want to butcher your name. So yes, right, I love that. And at Burnsville High School, we have an amazing Pathways program. We've got rooms that look like an actual hospital room. And there is a little bit of construction there, very safe. They put together a modular house, that sort of thing. And there are lots of schools that have the Pathway program. And we heard a bill in labor that was exactly that through the 49ers. And that's great. Love it. But what I think is special about this bill is it's very targeted. Like, those things are happening. We like that. Let's expand them. But this is specifically targeting women folks that are in the communities of color, low-income communities, they often go together, and then our veterans. And so while we absolutely believe in the Pathways program and we want to go into the schools and get kiddos interested, absolutely, this bill is a little bit more targeted to a specific group that oftentimes struggle to find a career, struggle to find opportunities. And so that's kind of who we wanted to reach. And they do quite a bit of outreach at frankly, a pretty great cost in order to do that. I don't know if that helps, but that's kind of who we're targeting and the reasons that we are.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. That answers my questions, and it's exciting. I think they're very important groups to be exposing to the trades, and I think it should be very successful and continue on a great track. So thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Berg.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And I love it when I come in committee and we have great and thoughtful discussions. The questions were incredible. It's been my honor to answer them and to carry this bill. I would just ask for your support because we really are offering a life-changing opportunity for the people that we care about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll renew my motion that House File 2248 be laid over for House File 3024 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Berg, and thank you, Mr. Declich. Next is House File 2248, Representative Baker. Representative Baker, would you like to move your bill to be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2248. To be considered possibly for inclusion. Members, I don't have a testifier today, but what I have here in front of you is a technical fix, I think, which is, I guess it's a little bit more than a technical fix. It came to me from a constituent in my area who's a farmer who has used a lot of immigrant workers that apply for the H-2A visa. I didn't know a lot about that, but it's a mostly ag temporary worker visa. They come up here. They have to have things paid for. And I will read a statement from my constituent as well, Mr. Chair, so that you kind of get an idea. But what this basically does is it adds to the folks that are not covered on unemployment insurance. These employers have been paying insurance premiums on unemployment insurance, but yet those H-2A visa workers are never eligible to take the benefit. So we're charging them, but they really don't get anything from it. So we're correcting this. If there was nonpartisan here that actually helped me write this bill, I would ask them the questions, but I think they felt like, and Deed is here too, if there's any concerns about that. But Mr. Chair, I'll just read the statement from the farmer that brought this to my attention. And this is really what states, and I think this is part of what our challenge is here in front of us. Mr. Chair and members, as with almost all Minnesota family farms, our operation has extreme difficulty in finding enough employees to plant and harvest our crop on an annual basis. The current tight labor market has even elevated this challenge to a much higher level. To help alleviate a part of this challenge, we started using the H-2A program for over 10 years to bring employees from South Africa and Ukraine, so we have enough employees for our crop season and operational needs. This has led to a 66% of our overall team is by providing our employees with the H-2A program. As part of that program, we are required to pay their round-trip travel to our farm, all living accommodations, including utilities that we provide daily transportation to and from the work site, and agency fees that help us with the H-2A regulations. All these costs are in addition to the market hourly wage that they are paid to each employee. We wish we didn't have all those added costs, but we also know there's not a whole lot of other options right now in today's environment. Without the Minnesota unemployment costs, these and other costs, it adds another $2.60 minimum per hour employee cost. So currently, this farmer, they pay the Minnesota state unemployment taxes on these H-2A wages, even though none of these employees can ever file or receive unemployment claims. In our 10 years of employing H-2A workers, not one employee has ever filed for an unemployment claim. If an employee is laid off, they need to find immediate employment elsewhere with a qualified farmer, or they need to go back to their country of origin or citizenship under those H-2A regulations. Again, the employer is required by law to provide and pay for a minimum of 40 hours a week for each one of these employees. If an employee remains employed during that season, in the entire crop season, they can only work with us until their H-2A visa expires, which always is November 30th of each year. These employees are working until the day they leave for the airport and cannot collect unemployment benefits like other U.S. employees. So members, this would, in his also closing statement, it roughly costs this farmer about $1 an hour for these employees of part of the benefits set that he pays. So I think what we're doing, Mr. Chair, we're just kind of correcting something I think that was either overlooked. Again, I have chatted with the deed, with our nonpartisan. There doesn't seem to be anybody opposed to this fix. And I knew nothing about this until my constituent brought it to my attention. So with that, Mr. Chair, I hope that we can consider this with our work this year. I think it would help, again, a small number of people that might be paying on this. I don't really know the fiscal impact on this. I don't think there's an employee or there's a fiscal because it's an unemployment insurance fund, not our general fund. So I think, I don't know if that would require that or not. But I just wanted to bring this to our attention and hope we can have a discussion, Mr. Chair, and include it with our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Baker. I think this makes sense if they don't have access, if they're not ever going to have access to it. But that's the question, and I'm glad you mentioned that you talked to Dee, because that's going to be my first question. Did they have any idea of why they've overlooked this or why they haven't been exempt in the past?
You know what? We should ask them to come down. I think that would be the best thing because, again, I don't want to speak for them. But, again, that might be a good idea. Thank you, Representative.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Devin Bowdry, legislative liaison at DEED. Representative Frazier, no idea.
No.
Did better than I did.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it seems like oversight is what it was. Or
okay. All right.
Complex program. Things get lost.
Thank you.
And to that, Representative Frazier, when I went to the nonpartisan staff to try to fix this, they said right up front, you know, this is kind of complicated. There's some federal issues in here. It wasn't like a super easy fix. They actually had to work on it for a while and get the language right. And, again, I've shared the language with the farmer and his accountant to make sure that he will, in fact, be relieved of this going forward. And, again, I don't think anybody had any issues. It's almost like it was an aha moment, like, I wonder why we didn't catch that sooner. So. I think that's all I can really tell folks.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Baker, I agree, it seems really logical. Has it been discussed at the UI Advisory Council?
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, it has not been. I think that I'm hoping that they're kind of watching anything that touches UI. I've heard nothing back from the advisory group and the members that sit on that. So if there has been a problem, I haven't heard of anything at this point, Representative.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Baker, just, I think it's the last one. Do we know how many folks are going to be impacted? Like, I know you've got this is your constituent, right?
It is.
You've got your constituent, but do we know, like, how broadly this is going to, like, benefit folks or help folks?
Representative Baker.
Like Deed, I have no idea. I don't have that information. I wish I did, but I don't.
Mr. Baldry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frazier, I would reiterate to that. I don't think the agency really has a good way of estimating that either. So,
okay.
Representative Frazier.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I would like to know, because I think I'd like to know how many folks we're helping. And will we be able to do that by just taking a look at how many visas are out there in that particular category? And would that be able to track that way?
Mr. Chair, Representative Frazier, I can definitely check with staff on that.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Baker. Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like it's an oversight, and I was just going to ask the same thing as Rep. Frazier. How many farmers is this happening for this specific visa? And it made me, I don't know if this is similar to the hotel, different resorts, different people that have various types of visas, the parameters. But I think these issues of being able to have employees and have flexible options and then, make it streamlined in the way it was intended. Sounds to me like it's an oversight, but I think it would be helpful if you could get us information on that just so we have a broad understanding of it. But I think if we can fix this, it sounds like it would help solve a problem in a real tight workforce market. So thank you.
Further discussion. Seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Baker.
And thank you, members, for the good questioning. There is already kind of this list of uncovered workers that are not eligible for unemployment. But I think the questions that we're asking is very good. I am committed to working with DEED and getting this information back to this committee, Mr. Chair, about how will it affect other folks, either with the H-2A, is there other temporary visas that we've maybe missed? But we will certainly bring that back to the committee before too long. So I'll look forward to working with my friends at DEED. And, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to include this in a future bill.
All right. Next bill, House File 1824, Representative Baker, would you like to make a motion to your bill?
Mr. Chair and members, again, I'd like to move House File 1824 to be possibly included in a later bill. To the bill, Mr. Chair, again, very simple, and this is more of a future idea that I'm working alongside Senator Draham. He's been having this idea for the last few years, and what it basically does is it's a very simple change to us looking at the county labor force participation rates. If you'll notice on the bill 1.14, it's basically saying that in years when we are listening to all these bills that we have heard, what we aren't asking is what is the workforce participation rate in that area? So what we should be focused on is getting the help to the areas that have either a lower or higher workforce participation rate based on what we find the needs are for the state. And this is just, I think, a piece of information we can include for future discussions, whether it's committees like this. Maybe it's a question we as members can start asking to folks to know what is their workforce participation rate. We hear the unemployment is very, very low, but we also have a lot of folks that either can't work, but what is the participation rate? So that's what I'm trying to get down to with my colleague in the Senate. So, again, Mr. Chair and members, I don't have a testifier. I think it's just good. It's good policy that we include as much information as we can for future discussions to make sure that we are focusing our dollars. And I think in the future, they're going to be leaner. It's going to not be as much as we're dealing with today. So I hope that when we do that, we're able to kind of laser in a little bit better on areas that actually need more support than other areas. So, Mr. Chair, that's really my presentation.
Discussion. Representative Wings.
Thank you, Chairman Jung, and Representative or Lead Baker. I like that. I think maybe there's another part to that that should be added to this. It's not just the participation rate, but it's the potential. So, because when we're looking at where should these deed-style programs and grants be focused, it should be in communities or counties that have excess potential, minus whatever the participation rate is. So I think it's the other half to this, and I don't really want to cause a problem with what you've already worked out, but I think that's another piece of information. And I'm also curious about how the data would be communicated, and would DEED be the storehouse for it?
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, that's a really good question, Representative. I think that's yet to come. I think I even have that question, too. This bill was brought to me again, like I say, from Senator Draham. I'd like to understand how can we work with DEED. I do not want to create a bunch of nightmare work. I want to keep it simple, but we do have 87 counties in the state, and I think each county has some uniquenesses to it. I want to make sure that we can provide a very simple reporting system that literally doesn't take any more time with our technology today. I'm hoping that this can be a very seamless data collection so we can make better decisions.
Representative Weems.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Zhang and Lead Baker. If we have an opportunity, whether that's in the future when it goes to conference committee, I think that would be a great fix. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm always interested in looking, and thank you, Representative Baker. Always interested in looking at new ways of using data to understand what's going on in the market. I would just be a little cautious about this one because of all of the reasons that people may not be participating and see if there are, I'm all in favor of going beyond just the unemployment rate. But how do we differentiate between the discouraged workers, for example, and people who are choosing to stay at home, people with disabilities, people with other issues, and make sure that we aren't oversimplifying with that measure? Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I think it was more of a statement, and I don't disagree with Representative Ryer. I think it's making sure that we're looking at the right information, how we're utilizing it. It's more than just unemployment rates. It's who is available to work and why are they not available to work, because then that might be part of it too. So I think, again, on a high level, we're just throwing in a component that let's address it. Again, I don't think it requires or it's any penalties for somebody who's not giving us this. It just puts it out there to make sure that whoever is collecting this is now including this information. I hope it works out.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. Proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Mark Hughes, and I've been a face in this house for a little while, and I've had the good fortune to be unemployed for a number of years. Now, there are options. As you just spoke, you said you can choose to not work, and that's your prerogative. However, when Congressman Jim Ramsted was in office a long time ago, he started the Ticket to Work program, whereby a person could keep their benefits as they have them set up and still earn their wage. And I want to, for maybe you knew that, maybe you didn't, I want to be sure that that's thrown out there, because you do have an option to work or not to work, or to work or not to work. And I have never expressed my opinion on it, but it's part of the social society of the disabled person. Now, the disabled unemployment is between 70% and 80% in good times even. So there probably are more people that don't work than do, but that's why the Ticket to Work program was set up, so that you could have the option to do it, and it was Congressman Ramsted that set that up, and it's still around today. So thank you, and that's about all I had to say.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Further discussion. Closing remarks, Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for the discussion. Again, I move House File 1824 for possible inclusion.
Next, House File 2407, Representative Ryer. Representative Ryan, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 2407. Chair Zhang, members of the committee, I'm here today to present House File 2407, which provides funding to the Carts to Careers Initiative. As we've heard over and over in this committee, workforce shortages are an ongoing problem for nearly every industry in the state, and the retail food industry is no exception. Employers are desperate for employees and are looking for innovative ways to recruit and retain them. The Carts to Careers program is an example of one of these innovations. As a global leader, the retail food industry is a major component of our state's economic success, viability, and stability. The food chain runs deep in Minnesota with food manufacturers, distributors, and retailers providing one out of 20 jobs. The industry is known for providing first-time jobs. These jobs are imperative to building the foundation for our next generation's future. What sometimes gets overlooked is the satisfying lifetime careers that the entire food chain, from farm to fork, provides. However, with the current and projected workforce shortages, it's critically important that we back our Main Street businesses by supporting educational opportunities to establish growth and success for the next generation of food industry leaders. House File 2407 provides funding for the Carts to Careers program, which is a statewide initiative to promote careers with the retail food industry. It is a $100,000 per year appropriation out of the Workforce Development Fund to the Minnesota Grocers Association Foundation. As you'll hear from the testifier, this is an exciting program and provides a good investment for our state. And I'd like now to introduce Jamie Poole, the president of the Minnesota Grocers Association Foundation.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, members of the committee. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on House File 2407. I am Jamie Poole, president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. First, I want to thank Representative Ryer for her support of the Carts to Careers program. I'm here to speak on our behalf of our sister organization, the Minnesota Grocers Association Foundation. Our foundation was established in 1992 to offer tuition grants, scholarships, community efforts, and initiatives. Minnesota has a unique culture of hundreds of grocer and convenience stores, many of whom are independent, multi-generational, and locally owned. We are their state trade association. We have over 300 members with 1,300 locations statewide, as well as food producers, manufacturers, brokers, and wholesalers. Our companies employ both union and non-union workers. Our industry from farm to fork is incredibly labor intensive. We provide, as Representative Ryer said, one out of every 20 jobs in this great state. But these are not just jobs. We offer opportunities for successful lifetime careers with competitive pay, a wide range of benefits to meet our very diverse workforce. It seems just about everyone has worked in a grocery or convenience store and their memories are always fond. Our Carts to Careers is a multi-pronged approach to expand the industry's workforce. Our objective is to provide a path for employees to gain the skills necessary to advance to high-level and engaging careers. This is an exciting program that has the potential to build on our existing workforce for stable and steady careers. This kicked off in 2019 with funding from DEED through an appropriation. Our first initiative works in partnership with the Alexandria Technical Community College. They offer an industry-based online educational platform to springboard learners to the next level. The program is called the Retail Management Certificate Program. It provides students the value of learning from each other in a very collaborative environment. It's a nationally recognized program that develops, builds, prepares, and strengthens participant skill set. It's an 8-course, 2-year program, and the credits can be transferred to a 4-year degree, which is not always common in a certificate. The program has shown participants what they're capable of achieving while building a genuine sense of pride in their career choice. We have 19 graduates, 50 students currently enrolled, and a cohort of 15 more students starting in the spring. They have unique industry experience with a variety of backgrounds, and they're from all across the state. We're very pleased to report that even during the pandemic, these students are excelling. We're currently working on 2 additional programs to answer labor shortages throughout the supply chain. The first is a transportation and driving program that is designed for warehouse workers looking to advance their position. It provides students with the training they need to become transportation drivers, including getting their CDL, commercial driver's license, safety, and training. We also are working with Ridgewater College in Willmar to establish a meat cutter training program. This is an online cohort with practical in-store experience. The Department of Agriculture is providing the grants to Ridgeway to start the much-needed meat cutter program, and we're excited to be able to execute the support for the students that want to enroll through our Carts to Careers. I also want to note that all of the programs require matching support from their employer or a supporting company. This is another way to foster insured success for that student. Just to be respectful to the committee's time, I'm the testifier for today, but I do have two quotes, one from a student and one from the student supervisor, just to give you a framework of how they feel. So this is from a young woman who works in the St. Cloud area, and this is her quote. Through the program's 2 years, I learned and grew through the many different courses and experience I wouldn't have had without this program. This program is beneficial to people working retail who have not had the opportunity to further their education, but have had a lot of passion and want to develop their skills to become future leaders in the grocery industry. Before participating in the program, I had many skills and a lot of knowledge in the retail business based on my 17 years of service. However, I never had the technical tools to help me feel confident in my role or encourage me to grow. Since graduating with my retail management certificate, I was fortunate enough to find my new passion within the human resources team. This program has helped me find my way and guided me to where I belong in the retail food industry. And this is from a supervisor. For us to thrive, employee and leadership development is absolutely critical. Our company has used the Carts to Careers program to help recruit and retain team members, several of whom have advanced into leadership roles. They learn practical skills and leadership, both of which help prepare them to lead teams of people and achieve results. Casey, the young lady, is a great example. She completed the program recently and is moving into a facilitator role at our corporate headquarters. That's going to impact employees all across the company. The whole point is that this doesn't just benefit the person taking the course. As a state, we understand the importance of having viable brick and mortar grocery stores and a robust supply chain. This takes a strong workforce, and we're proud of the incredible opportunities from farm to fork our industry provides. I want to thank all of you for your time today and considering the Carts to Careers program. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Poole, thank you so much for this. This is, again, I think you mentioned earlier, a lot of us have experience in the food industry. I started my management career running a grocery store for my in-laws up in International Falls for many years with the Red Oil chain, then it was Super Value County Market. There is so much to learn in this industry, and I think one of the problems with your bill, Representative Breyer, it's not big enough. And I say that only because I'm a Republican. Everybody know I'm a Republican. I said that. But also, what's unique about this is there's a grocery store. They're all over the state of Minnesota, and when we lose one, whether it's in an urban market or greater Minnesota, those are devastating to these communities. And if we can start growing our own in a way, there's so many opportunities in a grocery store, from meat cutting, from produce, from just the soft skills of checking people out, answering phones. It's the greatest first job in many ways. And you just, there's such advancement levels. And I think that, as a big supporter of the Minnesota grocers, I know that this can go a long ways. I'm proud of the Ridgewater program that they just got going. It's getting a lot of press in our area because it's a dying breed, and we need more meat cutters. So I think this is a really terrific workforce program project that we can do statewide. I really do support this, Mr. Chair, as we kind of work to our final bill. So thank you for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Chair Zhang, Representative Ryer, and Ms. Fuel. Just one question, Deb. Lead Baker kind of really covered the whole thing, and we're going to check his credentials here. He wants to double everything. But what I'm curious about is not only that, you know, you talked about your mission and what you're currently doing with the Alexandria technical skill set there, and you're going to expand it to the meat cutters as well as transportation. Is the appropriation that is in this bill, is it go to the expansion or the current operation or sort of a hybrid of both those? And how many applicants, how many students would be involved in that?
Chair Zhang?
Thank you.
So it will go to a continuation of the programs. Our current appropriation is being used to build those out, and it will just continue that. All three of the programs that we're offering cost about $5,000, $5,500, and so it's about $2,600, $3,000 per student, because we do ask for that 50% support, that commitment from the business that's either sponsoring them or going to obviously be their employee. So and to date, we've not had to turn anyone away for the program, so all the folks that have been applying have been through. I will say we've had a little bit of a slow start in that COVID, as we were peaking, COVID came, and it just kind of put some challenges into the workforce and being able to build out. So this is just an extenuation of that.
Representative Weems.
Chair Zhang, and Ms. Field, just one follow-up. Once they complete the certification or whatever process they're going through, is there some sort of agreement? Will they have sweat equity, or they're deployed to one of the grocers or one of your partners for a couple of year placement? I'm just kind of curious how the fulfilling part of the workforce is completed.
Mr. Gould.
Chair Zhang. Representative Weems, so they are being supported and sponsored with an employer currently, so they'll go back and move through that employer. As with the meat cutter, they might not have been married in the beginning, but through the online program, there will be that support and sponsorship, because half of their work will have to be done within that, within the grocery store. And I will tell you, they're not going to let those folks go, so they'll stay put.
Representative Weems.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Representative Ryer and Ms. Field. Sounds like a great program. Thank you.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, and thank you, Representative Ryer, for this bill. I still remember working at Rainbow Foods and going to training for a week, and Granny Smith apples are $2.52. So the programs work. That's before the scanner, so... But I think these programs like this are just fabulous. I agree with Rep. Baker that it needs to be more expansive across greater Minnesota and the whole state, really, because the neighborhood grocery stores and are critical. I mean, this whole there's so many opportunities. One of our sons was a meat cutter at two different places, a local meat private business, and then also I believe Sam's Club. So it's great opportunities for people to see how it works. And then I learned more about vegetables by being a cashier than I ever would have. I didn't know what ginger root was, but I do now. So I think it's awesome, and I think it's commendable, and it'll be great for the communities across the state. So is the program intended to serve various sections, or how do you decide that?
Cool.
Chair Zhang, anyone is eligible, and because they are online programs, and then the back end of that is training within the store. So the Alexandria Technical College, though they're the college that we're using, and again, we're also very proud that it's circular, that we're able to keep that within a college in the state. But it's online, so that's the beauty of it, is that it is a very collaborative. When those students are in the cohort, they're learning from others that are in the sector across the state. So we have students right now from all corners. So,
thank you, Chair, and thank you very much. I have no further questions. I think it's a great bill. Thank you, Rep.
Further discussion. Closing remarks, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your support. To me, the thing that attracted me about this bill is that it really does meet employees where they are. You know, you're coming in, and I had a very short and shall we say unsuccessful career in retail, working in a local bakery where it proved that I was not very good at twist ties, and they had to let me go. I think I was 14. But it's the type of thing where people from all communities, all parts of the state can find a path forward and find a way to a satisfying career. And I appreciate your support.
Rep. Representative Wright, would you like to renew your motion to lay over House File 2407 for possible inclusion?
Thank you.
All right. Next is House File 1371. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion. This is a CLUES bill. CLUES is a wonderful institution. Many of you have heard about, so I'm not going to say much. I'll let Ms. Ruby Lee explain more about the bill and the wonderful institution.
All right. To your testifiers, please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Ruby Azurdia Lee. I'm the president of Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio, CLUES. First, I'd like to thank Representative Xiong for his ongoing support and for carrying our workforce and employment bill. Thank you for having us today. CLUES is Minnesota's largest and oldest Latino-led nonprofit, founded 42 years ago. Our mission focuses on advancing social and economic equity and well-being for Latinos. Our culturally tailored programs are designed to engage people holistically and in multi-generational ways. With offices in St. Paul, Minneapolis, Wilmer, and Austin, CLUES serves over 30,000 people annually with the help of 140 staff members and 600 volunteers. I'm here to ask for your support of House File 1371, which will help us expand workforce skills training, customized employment coaching for underserved youth and underemployed individuals needing new skills, better paying jobs, and new career pathways. Today, Minnesota's Latino population is the third largest demographic group in the state with close to 350,000 residents. Since 2000, Latinos in Minnesota constituted 26% of the state's overall population growth. Latinos represent 68% of the state's labor force today. Yet when measuring income, Latinos represent some of the lowest paid groups in the state. Latinos also represent the fastest growing and youngest population in the state with a median age of 25 years old. With a young population, our investment in retooling and reskilling today's Latino workforce is critical so that we can address growing income disparities faced by our workers and our youth. Direct appropriation today will help CLUES increase capacity to replicate and scale up successful programs in urban and rural areas. The demands for skilled workers and for employment coaching have multiplied since 2020, and your support will help us achieve greater impact and serve greater numbers of people. Half of the funds requested will be designated to close income and employment gaps and scale up services in Greater Minnesota. I'd like to defer my time to a team member from Wilmer, Minnesota.
Please state your name. Continue with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Mendoza, and I am CLUES Career Navigator and Community Liaison for the City of Wilmer. At CLUES, we strive to reduce barriers for our participants, such as transportation, especially in the depths of a Minnesota winter, as well as the lack of time and the high cost of trainings. One of the courses we have offered is the CDL course, as trucking in Greater Minnesota is a sought-after career with abundant available positions. While recruiting for the CDL class, participants from all over southern Minnesota applied. Some were willing to drive up to 3 hours to be present at the class, while others were unable to go such a distance. To best serve all of the participants, CLUES worked with Bridgewater College, utilizing both their virtual CDL course and their fast track in-person course. With the in-person course, my participants were actually driving semis by day four. I wish I could have shared the videos, but I didn't think ahead far enough. So I apologize. However, for that group in 2022, your appropriations funds allowed the average CDL student to go from making $7.60 an hour to an astounding $21.33 an hour. Our training programs are not only aligned with the needs of individuals, but to the needs of communities. In my community alone today, there is a need for over 600 childcare spaces for families in need of childcare. With expanding funding for workforce training, CLUES will support childcare providers as a sustainable business and career through mentorship, technical support, and customized bilingual licensing programs. Some of the barriers our participants are lacking is what the state's appropriation funds support: a skilled workforce and sustainable living wages. My community is working, and they are working long hours while being away from their families, yet they struggle to put aside money to reinvest in themselves. This is why these appropriation funds are needed. They tell the recipient that they are worthy of upward mobility, and to many, this is the biggest investment that anyone has ever made in them, and they are so appreciative of this. Thank you for all of your past and present, or excuse me, your past and future investments in our community, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for the testimony. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify? Otherwise, we'll just open it up to member questions. Representative Zalesnikar, you have the first question. And this is the first time the chair has been up in the hot seat. Make them hard, okay?
Yeah, no, if you want your bills passed, yeah.
Not sure who to address as the chair here. All right. Okay, Chair Young. No, I think this is a very interesting program, and I guess I come from a healthcare background, so I'm thrilled to see all the things that you, I've looked at your website, what you do in the trades and the CDL, and all those things are great, and healthcare workers and a career path beyond a CNA, phlebotomy and all of them. So that's fabulous. And my question was, I was interested in the family childcare program you do, because we've had 700 family childcare closures in Minnesota, which worries me for not just, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's a problem, and also the entire state. And when I was looking at it, it sounds like it allows for training, you know, and that is a really mandated system also with rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. And it can be, I think, burdensome, and it takes 6 to 7 months to go through the mandates, the requirements, and then help, you know. I wanted to ask how the success of the program, if you've seen the number of licenses increase for your community, because that's a real barrier, I think, for us in the state of Minnesota is the family childcare provider, and many need that model. And I love both. The centers are great and family centers, but without family childcare centers, we're at a disadvantage. And in many communities, we don't have centers. It's we've always relied on family, and I've had many people say they've stopped providing family childcare. It's not sustainable. It's not affordable. There's a variety of reasons. So I wondered if you could talk to your successes on that piece of this program.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead and continue.
Thank you so much. That's a wonderful question. Actually, we're seeking support so that we can expand programming in this area. The current funding that we have through the past direct appropriation has not allowed us to move in that direction. Yet, we have been working with DHS for over 3 years now, creating innovative ways in which Latino care providers can be turned into workers and business owners in this model. So our model going forward, and we're ready to launch a pilot in the east side of St. Paul, actually, that will allow us to create a business incubator area that provides support for informal providers that we have been training over time to attain their child care licenses. So that's step one, right? Training informal providers to become part of the economic system in the state and become business owners. Through that, they will increase their wages, they will increase participation. Our job, like your jobs, is to create opportunities and eliminate barriers for people and for workers. And we know that transportation, affordable child care, and housing are the three biggest barriers for people to get back to work. Does that answer your question?
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Zhang. If I could just ask another follow-up. So the intent is to increase the number of family child care providers, giving them this money would go to help an individual become their own entrepreneur by owning, you know, having their own family child care license and understand the steps. Am I understanding that correctly?
Attain the license, attain the training, and attain the license with – quality child care would be part of many of the, we provided a handout, I hope that you'll have it, but on the orange side you can see the different trainings. So besides CDL, trying to tackle the child care shortage, provided shortage, it's important to us.
Representative.
Thank you. Chair, and thank you for that. I would hope that this knowledge is something that, since you've worked with DHS, I think one of the complications we have is sharing knowledge. And so the child care mandates are as complicated as the nursing home and assisted living regulations. I've read them. And they're like this. So I can't imagine a family trying to figure out how to get licensed and do it. So I would hope that in this, if you're going to have seed money for the child care training in this 6 to 7 month curriculum, that we could have a report back to the committee on what you learned, that we could use these best practices across the state, because this is a barrier for, I'm hearing about this barrier statewide. And so the information that you're learning with DHS's assistance, I think is going to be valuable statewide. Is it working? Are the counts the right thing? Do we have it right? Some of this language is old, some of it's been revised, but is the language going to work for a home child care family provider? What needs to be changed? And so I think that will be helpful for the workforce committee on a statewide initiative beyond this. And I think it's a wonderful piece, and you're going about it in a different way to help people understand how to put the pieces in place so they can stay licensed and become an entrepreneur and in one capacity in the child care component, which is so critical for the communities to have it and feel that sense of trust. They know the people, and some people love the child care model from a family perspective. So thank you for the various levels you do, and I don't have any further questions.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Ms. Lee, it's good to see you again. Great organization. Jennifer, thank you for being here from the amazing city of Willmar, Minnesota. And the CLUES footprint has only grown in Willmar. I think they somewhat started in the Willmar area kind of when I started here. It was shortly after I arrived here. I think I carried one of my first bills was with CLUES, and I got to know them quite well. I think it was the incredible charm of the representative that maybe kind of pulled you out there to maybe open up a spot. I'm kidding. But since then, you have actually really grown, and I hear so many great things about CLUES because of Jennifer and your work locally here. The CDL program especially, I hear things about that a lot. Our employers are so grateful you're there. We need to find better ways of partnering with our local employers. I think that we can expand that. I think we always have to remember leveraging our dollars here in Minnesota is always got to be tapped into with our private sector as well. They are living it every day. They've hopefully got the resources, but they need to find more resources to help us get more people out there. So, again, great job, great organization. I'm extremely proud of them, and again, I appreciate you continuing to grow in other areas around the state where it makes sense for this community. So thank you very much.
See no other questions or comments? Chair Zhang, you have the final word.
Great organization, and I hope we'll consider going to the final on this bill, and I will renew my motion that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, and it will be laid over. Last up on the list is House File 2199. Chair Howard, welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 2199 be considered and laid over for possible inclusion in the Workforce Development Omnibus Bill. Chair Howard, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Brand, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning with all of you to present a really important bill for a really incredible organization doing work that literally no one in this state can match. And I'm presenting House File 2199, which would provide resources to MICC. And what I would say about this is as we continuously work to address our workforce shortages we know that are critical, we cannot leave behind Minnesotans with disabilities, with learning differences. And with the right support, individuals with disabilities can gain the skills needed to be incredibly great members of our community with incredibly great participation in our workforce. And MICC, through their programming, has an amazing track record. I'm sure my testifier can share some statistics about the amazing track record they have in terms of their participants graduating and becoming workers in and around our community. Folks all across the state attend MICC because of its leadership in this area. And what I'd add is I know members that have been here have probably heard students from MICC testify before. For newer members, you might not be as familiar. We have some students here. These are just incredible, incredible young people who have the opportunity at MICC to have a place where they can learn and grow and find themselves and find a path forward for a successful life. And I've just been so impressed and honored to work with these students and to learn from these students, and so impressed with what MICC means for not just my community but our entire state. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Amy Goodmistead, and I am the Executive Director at Minnesota Independence College and Community. Thank you for your time, Chair and committee members. I am speaking in favor of House File 2199. MICC provides post-secondary college program and after-graduation services to young adults with autism and learning differences. With the autism diagnosis on the rise, this is a critical time to expand our program to serve more individuals who need our services. This bill would support the work that we are doing with our participants who are in the workforce post-graduation, as well as allow us to expand our career services to assist more Minnesotans with disabilities. At MICC, we provide the opportunity for autistic adults to completely transform their lives by gaining the skills they need to live independently, secure, and maintain meaningful employment, and be a part of a community where they feel accepted and appreciated. We are proud of our participants' success, which far exceeds national statistics. Across the U.S., less than a half of high school graduates with autism have held any kind of paid employment within 4 years of graduation. We know that MICC works. Our current employment rate is 98%. At MICC, we strive to change the perspective and the current state of employing people with disabilities. MICC's career program emphasizes integrated competitive work. Our career certificates that are endorsed by Century College include retail training, hospitality training, culinary, and health services. We deliver these courses, provide hands-on curriculum, practicum sites, and we provide supports to ensure our participants are prepared and employable in their chosen industry. At MICC, we monitor Minnesota's workforce needs and are committed to providing training and opportunities to our participants for those high-need job areas. We are proud of our employer relationships we maintain and who is hiring our participants. You can find them at over 50 local employers such as Delta, Walgreens, Presbyterian Homes, Best Buy, Speedway, the Guthrie, YMCA, and more. In fact, I have two of our graduates who did not have to work today with us, Nori, who is working at Pizza Luce, and Marit, who works for the Edina Public Schools, are here observing committee today. We are proud. We would like to expand our services and career certificate program to autistic adults who are not currently being served by MICC, but who are seeking employment and who want to enroll in our career certificate program. Expanding our career services will enable our more autistic adults to gain meaningful employment, receive job retention support, such as training in the new job, problem solving, job advancement, transportation training to the job site, and continuing education courses. As I close, it is important to note that MICC provides a strong financial return on investment back to the state of Minnesota. Wilder research found that for every $1 invested in the state from the state to MICC, there is a $38 return. We need to utilize all capable Minnesotans to address our workforce shortage, and individuals with disabilities can make fantastic employees when provided the right services. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further discussion. Representative Weems.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Representative Howard. And thank you, Ms. Goodmistead. fantastic program. And just in a little research, you guys received the transparency seal in 2019, just you know, with a 98% in the returns. Fantastic. And thank you ladies back there for the work that you do in the community. And our goal here in Workforce, of course, is that I think every Minnesotan has a job that they're proud to be in and they're contributing to the community. And just in closing, my best friend growing up was Robert Goodmestead, and I thought they were the only family of Goodmestead. So I've got to figure out if there's some 6 degrees of separation and connect you up maybe with your long-lost relatives. So thank you, Chair Zhang, and thank you, Representative Howard and Mr. Goodmestead.
Well, Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say to Representative Howard, or Chair Howard, rather, I signed on to your bill. It's a really important bill, I think. And I'm thinking of a friend of the family who their son actually went through the MICC program, graduated in 2022. And now he has the ability to be independent, the ability to do good things with his time, and to benefit the community in the process. And so MICC does a really awesome job. The quality of the product at the end of the graduation process is wonderful. So thanks a lot for being here today as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Goodmanson, Goodmestead, thank you. So I like this a lot, this bill, and I don't want to put our friends on notice here, but I'm wondering if they would be willing to come forward and share who they are and where they might be working, if they'd be willing to do that, because the stories are really important. And Mr. Chair, we're doing so well on time today, if you don't mind. I just wanted to see if they would come up and just share who they are and where they're working, if there's one or two of them. All right.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Marit Spoker, and I'm working at Countryside Elementary School.
Welcome.
Hi, I'm Nori Miller, and I work at Pizza Luce on West 66th Street on Richfield, Minnesota.
Welcome. Thank you for being
here. And Mr. Chair, if I just follow up again, I know that I heard something about we have a pizza chef here maybe, or I'm not sure what she does at Pizza Luce, but I know it's a great organization, and I just wanted to ask the questions to each one of you. How long have you been in this program, and how much do you enjoy working at your current employer? Either one of you can go.
I've been living here 7 years, and I really enjoy my job at Pizza Luce because I work in the mornings, and then I have the rest of the day to do whatever I want.
Okay, all right.
I've been part of the program for like 5 years now.
And final question, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Howard. Is this the kind of a program, ladies, that we should support again? Is this something that you think we should continue to do? All right. Thank you so much.
Further discussion? Those are your remarks, Representative Chair Howard.
Chair Zhang, members of the committee, thank you, and I want to thank Representative Baker for inviting the students to come up. I really appreciate that. When we've had this bill up before, it is always the students that are the star of the show. And this is presumptuous of me, but at times I've been invited to the graduation at the end of the year, and I've been to a number of times, and that's something I would guess all you'd be invited to. It's a really impactful, wonderful celebration, and I'm just grateful for the conversation, for the support of the committee, for such a worthwhile, amazing organization, and would encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will remove my motion. House File 2199B, later for possible inclusion. Thank you, Ms. Goodmestead and Chair Howard. And that concludes representation.
Mr. Chair, yeah, just to guess, where are we at with kind of getting together next week, if you can just give the committee just sort of a heads up of as to what we should expect as we start to kind of put together our final bill.
Good question. The bill will be public next week, I'm assuming Tuesday, And then we will have staff present the bill Wednesday, and then Fridays we'll do Mark Grove.
Mr. Chair, and so would it be Wednesday or Fridays would we start looking at amendments? Is that when Friday would be that?
Friday.
Okay.
Wednesday will be testimony.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Appreciate that.
Any other questions? Members, I want to thank all of you for being here today. I know we had a long morning yesterday, so I'll let y'all go get some rest and be up and excited for next week. Please adjourn.